Hi, everyone. This is Amanda Borchel-Dunn, and you're listening to the Times of Israel podcast. Before we begin, a quick personal coronavirus update. So with schools still out all over the country and no end in sight, I'm still hunkering down at home with my six kids. And I have to say, between work, the kids' homework assignments, and the constant need to eat, I'm sort of losing my mind. Just while trying to record this, three of the kids have knocked on the door. But like so many parents, I'm a bit worried as well. Three of the kids are kind of sick, but frankly, three of them are always kind of sick. So who knows? And don't mind our two dogs barking in the background during our conversations. They're also going a bit stir crazy. But to find the humor in this situation, last week I spoke with two American-born comedians living here. Check out that episode if you missed it. And this week we're doing a part two to my question, is it ever too soon to joke about something? So I've lived in Israel for 20 years now, and I have to say sometimes jokes are just funnier in Hebrew. So I phoned up two Israelis who are on the forefront of satire here, Asaf Bezer, one of the creators of Hayudim Baim, or The Jews Are Coming, and also popular stand-up comedian Yonatan Barak. Parents be warned, he gets a bit raunchy, so he closes the show. We'll first speak to Asaf, whose show Hayudim Baim makes fun of Jewish and Israeli history. He talks about a satirist's duty, especially in times of darkness.
Hello.
Hello, Asaf.
Karen.
Hi, Madres Amanda Mia, Times of Israel.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
I'm okay. So in general, I'm phoning because of all the humor that I'm seeing out there, mostly online, around the coronavirus. And I want to know if there's more of an Israeli angle to it than perhaps just a general Jewish use of humor. And I phoned you. You've been in many, many, many projects, obviously, but one of them is Hayudim Baim, The Jews Are Coming. And so you really have a sense of what is Jewish and Israeli humor. Can you say a few words about the program to begin with?
The program, The Jews Are Coming, is a sketch show, a 25-minute sketch show about the history of the Jewish people. It's from the days of the Bible, from Abraham until almost nowadays, till Rabin's assassination and even later stuff. It's a satire show about the history of the Jewish people.
Okay, and what makes the Jewish, it's the history of the Jewish people, but you're also doing it often, it feels like, from a very Israeli way, more than just a Jewish way. And is there any such thing as Israeli humor, in your opinion?
Jewish humor or Israeli humor?
Right. So there's obviously Jewish humor, and many, many, many books have been written about it. But I'm wondering, what do you see as humor that is particularly Israeli?
The Israeli humor, I think, is very bold. It's irreverent sometimes, even. More than other kinds, more than American humor, more than most of the European humor. I think we don't keep anything in our stomach. Mm-hmm. We can say things. We don't use too much subtext. We use like in every other aspect of life. We have a lot of chutzpah in our humor as well.
Now, when you're looking around at what is being circulated throughout, I mean, I don't know about you, but our family WhatsApp groups are just, you know, full of jokes and memes that are being passed over and over. And have any stood out to you personally?
Well, there are a few people on Twitter that really makes me laugh.
Who's that?
One of them, I think, who's the funniest on the Israeli Twitter is Reshef Shai. I don't know if you know him.
No, I'll look him up.
He's definitely there. He's also one of the writers of Eretz Nedaret.
Okay, and what makes him particularly funny?
His angle of looking at things is always a little different. He always he finds the connections between things. He finds the political angle in everything. And political angle is what makes me laugh. always one of the funniest, in my opinion.
Have you noticed on Twitter, there's a woman who is in quarantine. She's called, I think, Cholam, especially being the Arba.
Yes,
sick lady
her.
Number 74. Right. You follow her? Yeah. I noticed her. And can you just describe some of the stuff that she's doing and what makes it particularly funny?
Well, I wasn't in Twitter in the last 24 or 48 hours or something like that, so I don't know what she writes now. But okay. At first, she was very upfront, very open about her condition, about transferring her from her house to the hotel and stuff like that. And once again, she treated a little lightly, at least on Twitter. I'm sure that in real life she's panicked. But the fact that she finds, once again, the funny angles in it always makes it a little more fun, always makes it... Suddenly you don't see her face, but you see a person who actually has the corona, and you understand, okay, it can happen to any one of us. And it makes it a little more human, you know. When the prime minister talks about the enemy with no face, that makes it very, very scary. But and it makes people fear or even hate people who have the virus. And they've done nothing but, you know, being in the wrong place in the wrong time most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that she's very important because she reminds us that sick people are around us. Sick people are our families, our friends, and it's not an enemy. We should treat it as an enemy, but it's, you know, we're all in it together. When you start talking about the virus as an enemy, and you start talking about the whole thing as a war situation, that means there are good and bad. And there are no good and bad in this situation. I mean, the disease, the virus, obviously, is bad, but it's very easy to go from there to starting shooting people for coughing in the street and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I think that the more we remember that they're not just numbers.
Right.
Her name is the number, you know.
Uh-huh.
And you remember that they're not just numbers, but humans who are in the wrong place in the wrong time and got this kind of crazy flu, or I don't know how to call it. That's the only bad thing they've done. You realize once again that we're all in it together.
100%. When you're looking around at what's happening today, are you thinking to yourself, wow, in another year, 2 years, this could be really great material? Or is it too soon to think of it in a satirical way?
I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm thinking for one of my kids' show, we already wrote an episode that is concerning not exactly the corona, but, you know, but being ill and being isolated from the world. Being in quarantine, we're already using it. We're not waiting a second. right now, I'm writing a sketch that I don't know if it will be aired or not for a show that I don't know if will happen or not next week. About the corona, about the situation.
And how are you even? I mean, technically taping if everyone is meant to kind of stay 2 meters apart from each other. How can you actually have a sketch?
Well, the actors eventually will have to get together and tape it. I'm not planning to be there. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I think one of the most interesting thing right now for people who write humor is to find the right voice between entertainment and satire. I think that's the biggest challenge. You can saw it yesterday in Eretz Nedaret. I don't know if you've seen yesterday's Eretz Nedaret, which is obviously the biggest humor show in Israel. The challenge to find your voice it's very tricky because from the one hand, people really need entertainment right now. People really need to laugh. People really need to take the stress out in the form of laughing. And it's important. I'm not saying it's not important. You know, it's a very, it's almost a national mission to do that as a writer. The other hand, someone comes from satire, there's a lot to say and there's a lot to criticize as well. And once you start criticizing, you stop being entertaining in a way. You're taking an opposite approach. And that's very tricky because there are things to be said. There are things, you know, critical voices to be heard. And satire is always, I think, one of the best tools to do that. But right now it's very tricky. Right now, I'm not sure how much people want to hear the satire voice, but it's important, especially now in Israel. You know, when a situation like that, an emergency, is always a very easy environment for the government to get stronger. And so it's an easy environment to start outlooking human rights, all kinds of rights. And here we can see it right now in a very strong way. Mm-hmm. And it's a harsh decision to take the entertainment route or the satire route, or how exactly to combine the two of them. You have to combine the two of them, I think, somehow. And you could see that in Eretz Nedaret yesterday, I think. That was a very big test case, because they're very satirical most of the time, but very entertaining as well. And I think that they chose to go to the entertainment side more. That's what I felt, at least.
Meaning to step away from politics a little bit.
I think mm-hmm. it's not stepping away, because that's their bread and butter. But even mm-hmm. when they do politics, they do it in a more entertaining way than a critical way.
It's interesting. I mean, I did not catch the Eretz Nedaret. I was exhausted from a day with my six kids. But but the particular sketches of theirs that stay with me the longest are definitely the ones that are not political, actually. It's the ones where you have the mother who's having to do some kind of a operation to get her kid from one place to another, from another, 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 which is more of a topic that is evergreen. It has no deadline. And I wonder, when you're writing about stuff, when you're creating satire, do you have in mind what is the shelf life for this particular sketch as well?
That's one of the... I wrote a political satire for many years, but that's one of the reasons I started writing Yehudim Ba'im was the question of the shelf life, because when I'm dealing with historical issues or biblical issues, I guarantee myself a longer shelf life.
Uh-huh. The Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But political satire, sometimes when it gets iconic enough, it can get a really long shelf life. Mm-hmm. Only if you really get iconic, you know, things like Nikui Rosh have done here 50 years ago, Eretz Nedaret have done over the years, or Chatzupim. There are a few things that once you really go iconic, you can last. Most of the satirical stuff really vanishes in thin air.
For sure. Now, Israelis are also really well known for telling a very good Holocaust joke. What are your feelings on Holocaust jokes in general, and do you think that Israelis in particular really have a special gift for it?
I'm not sure it's a gift. It's more of I would call it a born right to tell Holocaust jokes, or even a born duty or chobah. How would you say?
Mm-hmm. Obligation.
Mm-hmm. Obligation. Yeah, sure. To tell those kind of jokes, we feel comfortable with the topic because we were the victims. That's why we feel comfortable to laugh about it. It's easier when you're the victim to come for me, you know, to tell the joke. Mm-hmm. You're not to blame them of anything. So that's why we got very good in it. I know that the Holocaust itself, there was a lot of humor in the Holocaust itself. There were a lot of satire writers in the Holocaust, even in the camps, or at least humor writers. It came with the fact that it happened to the Jewish people. You took the funniest people and you tried to kill us all. So what can you expect? Of course, mm-hmm. there will be a lot of jokes about it. I think if it was the other way around, I think if the Jewish people would have tried to kill the German people, there would be way less killed victims on the one hand, and way less jokes on the other hand.
Okay.
They're better in killing, and we're better in making jokes. So
So few, I guess. I don't know.
that's how it works.
The natural order.
Exactly.
Yofi. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle-Singer from The Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Now we'll hear from stand-up comedian Yonatan Barak. One of the country's top performers, his comedy specials have been seen by millions and his live shows regularly sell out. I have to admit, he is a favorite in the Don household and my teens quote him incessantly. Parents should be warned, though, this is not a kid-friendly conversation and neither is the following clip from one of his English language performances.
So I'm going to tell the story about the time I found my grandmother's vibrator. It all started a few years ago when my grandmother died. We went to her house, and I opened a drawer next to grandma's bed, and there are books and pictures of the grandkids and a book and a vibrator. And I went to my mom and I said, "Mom!" I felt like King Arthur when I held it up in the air. I was like, "Look what I found." And my mom, while doing the dishes, she just looks at me and she says, "Put that away. That's grandmother's vibrator." So my mom says, "It's a really old vibrator. Your grandma came to this country with this vibrator." And I say, "Wait a minute. Grandma escaped the Nazis. Grandma was in Poland. And then in 1939, when the Germans invaded Poland, my great-grandfather took the family and said, 'The Nazis are coming. We're leaving tonight. Take only what you need to survive.'" My grandma went, "Ha ha, I know what I'm packing," and came to this country with a vibrator and died with that vibrator next to her bed. And now it's in the attic. I offered it to Yad Vashem. They didn't want it.
Hi, Yonatan.
Hey. What do you want to talk about?
So I want to talk about humor in the time of coronavirus and what is particularly Israeli humor in terms of finding light in the darkness or making the darkness darker. So first of all, where am I finding you?
Right now at home, like everyone else.
Yeah, okay, great. So where's home?
Tel Aviv.
Okay, great. Has anything stuck out to you so far in terms of what humor you've been seeing, Israeli humor?
I think Israelis, like more than other nationalities, are used to being under siege or being told to stay at home. So it's probably less of a trauma for us than it is for other nationalities. Like, I'm assuming the problems that they have in Europe with the virus has a lot to do with the fact that people are not willing to stay at home. And in Israel, you know, they'll give you shit about it, but they'll generally do as told. They're better at crisis management than other countries.
Right. No, I hear you, actually. I hear what you're saying. And because we're so used to kind of being in semi-crisis mode, perhaps we're also used to making jokes about it at the same time, where, you know, just seeing everything as funny in a way.
The first rule of comedy is that comedy is tragedy plus time. But for Jews, time is irrelevant. That's why Jews can make fun of tragedies as they occur. Like other nationalities, they need time to pass before they can make jokes about the tragedies. But Jews don't have that problem.
Well, that explains so much. You remember, of course, the Pittsburgh terrorist shooting in a synagogue a year and a bit ago. So I went to cover it as a journalist, and I was in four or five different funerals. And in every single funeral, there were so many jokes. It was crazy.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. So time is irrelevant to the Jewish people. All right. Good. And
because
so
we have been, you know, we have been suffering for 5,000 years. So like, no joke is too soon or too late. We can still make jokes about, you know, being slaves in Egypt, and we can still make jokes about the Holocaust, and we can still make jokes about the coronavirus. We have, like, we have that privilege that we can always make jokes about the terrible things that happen to us.
Because it's always terrible.
Yeah, because nothing good ever happens to the Jewish people.
Except for knedelach, you know, I mean, matzah ball soup.
Yeah, yeah. That was worse, being enslaved in Egypt, you know, for the matzah balls.
Right. Well, okay, interesting. And do
you
see,
black people were slaves, they have better food than we do, I'm just saying.
I don't know, grits. Have you ever had grits?
I've had grits. I've had fried chicken, too. They're both better than anything that you will put on the Seder.
The Seder is not the gold standard of Jewish cooking. That is like the worst, you know, it's making...
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Give me like Rosh Hashanah, you know, that's like good food where you can bring out the fruit and the nice stuff. I mean, Seder, come on.
The fish.
Oh, well, you know, there's what to be said, of course. Okay, now, so you're talking about Jewish humor in general, but I wonder if there's any difference between Jewish humor.
Israeli humor is a bit different than regular Jewish humor because it's got more of, you know, chutzpah in it. Like my grandfather, he used to always have this terrible thing that he would say about Jewish people. I mean, it's okay because he was Jewish himself, so, you know, Jews can be anti-Semites. He would always say that the problem with Jews is that Jews are a little like shit. And when you put shit in the field, shit becomes fertilizer and it helps grow amazing things. And that's what happens if you put a Jew anywhere in the world. You put a Jew anywhere in the world, he will make everything grow there. But if you put all the Jews in one place, like you do in Israel, then what you're left is just a big pile of shit.
Well, where is your grandfather from?
He's from Argentina.
Okay.
So he came here in the 70s.
Shit. Yeah.
And he would always say that about the Israelis. I think the Israelis are like Jews are always trying to find the trick. That you know why Jews don't like magicians? Like everywhere in the world, magicians are a big deal, except for Israel, because we don't like to be fooled. We don't like to be tricked. We don't like to be fooled. We always have to know, you know, what's going on, and that's why Jews don't like magicians.
I mean, some of the greatest magicians were Jews, though, obviously, you know that.
Yeah,
you know?
But Jews don't like magicians. They're not the ones that
so it's the self-hating Jew who becomes a magician, right?
So the reason Jews don't like magicians is because we have to always, you know, be the smarter one, the smartest person in the room. And that comes across in our humor as well, because the thing about Israeli humor is that it's the same thing as Jewish humor, only it's like more sarcastic and more vicious and more cutthroat and you know, sooner. And we don't, you know, there's no joke that's too soon in like for Israelis. That's why if you see shows like Eretz Nehederet and Gav HaUmah, and even like if you go to a comedy club, you'll see that people will make jokes about, you know, about anything terrible that happens as soon as it happens, like whether it's sexual harassment or murder or like the coronavirus. The Israeli comedians are always like the first responders to anything, because we feel privileged. We feel we have the right. Like, you know, we've been through so much shit, we can say whatever we want.
So you have the right, but do you also have maybe the duty to continue telling jokes?
You know, I'll tell you a story, because I've been doing this for a while. In 2001, September 11th, the Twin Towers came down. And the next day, there was a reporter, just like you, that was asking me the same questions about, is it too soon to do jokes about it? When can we expect people to make jokes about it? And I told her the same thing that telling you now, that comedy isn't dying. Comedy isn't going anywhere. And the thing that everybody thinks is tragic now won't be as tragic in a couple of years from now. And people will be making jokes about the coronavirus very, very soon. Like, as soon as this thing blows over, yeah, you'll see jokes about the coronavirus everywhere. Right now, people are a bit hysterical, and that's like their prerogative, because they're living in the moment. But a comedian doesn't live in the moment. He's always he's always, you know, outside the moment. So he doesn't care about the people dying or the tragedy, or it sounds terrible, but he doesn't see it unless it affects him personally. A comedian doesn't see the tragedy. That's why we can make jokes about tragedies as soon as they happen, unless, of course, they happen to someone that we know. So as long as, like, no Israeli comedian gets the coronavirus, you can pretty much bet that they'll keep making jokes about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems like the first response right now, you know, other than stand up, which we can't do, is the internet, the social media, things of that nature. And they come very quickly. Would you say that comedians prefer to, I mean, this is horribly generalizing, but that they prefer to maybe step back and not take to Twitter as the first response, or is there no way of knowing?
I think a lot of comedians right now are busier licking their wounds from their canceled tour dates,
right,
than you know, preoccupied with making jokes about it. Because mm-hmm. like everybody's been telling me, like, you should go live on Facebook and talk about the situation. I don't miss performing. I miss the money that comes
right.
with performing. You
Definitely.
Know, it's not like mm-hmm. I'm a junkie that's addicted to the spotlight. You know, it's mm-hmm. my job to go on stage and perform for people. So this is actually kind of like a vacation for me. I would have to be honest with you. I just had a kid, and I had tour dates. I was going on stage every night. It's nice to be mm-hmm. home with the kid.
Yeah, mazel tov. Yeah, no, I get that.
You know, I'm pretty confident that by the time summer rolls by, we'll all get our jobs back. Mm-hmm. But right now, nobody knows anything. You know, I think it's time to reassess and be with the ones you love, because you don't want to be the idiot that was making jokes about the coronavirus 2 weeks before it killed him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's worse than fiddling while Rome burns, obviously.
I'll bet you dollars to donuts that there was a guy walking around on the Titanic making jokes about the iceberg.
Some Jew, right?
That guy is funny now.
Yeah, right.
You know, wait till you get on the lifeboat and then you start making the jokes.
Oh, good point. Yeah. Now, speaking of donuts, you know, my kids, teens through age 7, just love your humor. And I know age 7 is not appropriate for that, but he walks around singing the song, the donut song.
I can't control what's
I know, I'm a bad mom. You shouldn't have heard it. I know.
I can't control the audience, and I can't control the audience age. And that's the thing that I remember, that when I was a kid, when I was like, you know, as old as your kids, I would watch probably movies and stuff and that weren't made for my age.
And now that you're a dad, are you thinking, oh, maybe I'll clean up my act and have a bit of a sketch for my child when he...
I don't think that I will clean up my act. My kid is offended with my jokes, then fuck him. You know, these jokes put the food on the table.
That's so, right. Yeah.
You remember, do you ever see Eddie Murphy Raw, where he talks about how Bill Cosby called him up and told him he shouldn't swear so much on his stand-up show? And he was so distraught about it that he felt so bad that Bill Cosby, that man that he idolizes, tells him that his act isn't good. So he called up Richard Pryor, and Richard Pryor said, man, tell that to shut the fuck up.
Wow. And now, of course, Bill Cosby, who is the family man, is the one whose, you know, reputation is in ruins, of course. Wow, funny. Now, I remember reading that you were thinking of touring in the States. Your English is excellent. Number one, how? And number two, did you ever tour in the States, and are you thinking of going back?
Well, first of all, my English is, I appreciate you calling it excellent. It's hard earned. You know, I was a kid and I grew up watching stand up and comedy from the States and from England. And, I picked up, the English, you know, not as a student, like, a self-taught individual. I taught myself, how to do accents, and I taught myself how to talk in English. And later on, I just started reading a lot of books in English, And I did perform a couple of times in London and a little bit in the United States. And there have been talks about making this like a real thing. But every time that option comes up, I am astounded by like the reality of actually doing it. Because like if I was to go on tour in America, I would be away from my family for 9 months. I would be sleeping in motels. I would be performing like in Albuquerque and Arizona and Ohio. And, you know, I've seen the tour dates, you know, I've had that future laid out in front of me. And I decided that it's fun on paper, but unless I'm going to be selling out Madison Square Garden, it's not going to be, it's not going to be fun being away from my family for so long and sleeping in like these shitbag motels. The thing about Israel that I love so much is that I can be on tour 300 days a year and still sleep at home. Do a show in Ashdod, I do a show in Ashkelon, I do a show in Be'er Sheva, wherever I do a show, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours tops later, I'm home. But I am venturing into movies, and if somewhere down the line making movies becomes something that I can do like in English and to a broader audience, then that's something that I would be very open to and very excited to do, because I'd still be able to, you know, do it like for 25 days a year and then still be here for the rest of the year.
Yes. Well, it sounds really exciting, and I hope, as we say, acharei coronavirus, everything works out for you, including the movie. Tfu, tfu, tfu. Thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
All right. Be well.
You too. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Times of Israel podcast. And a special thanks to TLV1 Studios for production help and to our musical guest, the Diva Family Band. I'm Amanda Borshel-Dan from the Times of Israel. Shalom, and I hope you join us soon.